Here's a quick flashback to when I sat down with NFL legend, Colorado legend, and reptile god, Chad Brown, and we're talking some crazy snake stories with him.
Okay, so the Bronx Zoo has had this reward for any snake over 25 feet. And it's been for, you know, 50 years or whatever, how long they've had this reward out there. So folks will contact the zoo from time to time from around the world and say they have a long enough snake. And the zoo asks for verification and things like that. And so in almost every circumstance, it ends up being a much smaller snake. Everyone overestimates the size of their snakes.
Classic.
That they see. It's human nature. Most people are like you and have a bit of a fear and a phobia. And that fear and phobia intensifies the reaction. So a 3-foot snake is now a 6-foot snake. 5-foot snake is now 12-foot. That's just kind of how it works. Even within my reptile shipping company, Ship Your Reptiles, when a customer calls and says, you know, what size box do I put my snake in? Well, how long is your snake? Oh, it's 7 feet. And I'm like, well, that species doesn't get any bigger than 4 feet. Oh, let me measure it. So everyone does it. So that's just, you know, human nature.
Right.
At any rate, I've got a friend, Cameron Tepedlin from Bushmaster Reptiles. He is a world-renowned reptile wrangler. And I've gone some trips with him across the world. And he and I were in Indonesia a couple of months after this person in Indonesia contacted the Bronx Zoo and asked Cameron, could he go investigate this claim of these large snakes? Traveling Indonesia is tough. It takes us a while to get there to where these snakes are supposed to be, this tiny little village. And we talk to the village guys, and they say, oh, yes, we caught the snakes. Trust us. They're really big. We've got some smaller ones, too. And they're in that abandoned train car over there. Okay. All right. So we go, you know, we start getting close to the train car, and it's pretty apparent there are no entrances into this train car except that kind of porthole on the top. It's like a, I don't know, would it be like an old oil train car of some sort? Maybe it was using a palm oil plantation, something like that. Okay. So it's a little hairy. You know, we got to jump literally like Indiana Jones into this train car, this pit of reticulated python. So the longest species of snake in the world is a reticulated python. And they are native to Southeast Asia and particularly to Indonesia. And there are definitely big forms of it on the particular island that we were on. So we know this is the right place for all this to happen. But the thing about reticulated pythons, they are extremely agile. They are extremely intelligent. So it's a very difficult opponent to tackle, so to speak. So, you know, we crack open the lid. We look down in there, shine the flashlight down in there. Yep, there's lots of snakes. Yep, we can see some big ones. Okay.
So you have to jump in there.
Well, and we're kind of essentially like unprepared because, you know, you hear a train car, you're thinking, oh, I'll be able to like a hobo, like slide the door open and walk into the train car.
Yes. Yeah.
No, it's not a hobo train car from the movies. It's like an oil palm car for transporting oil. All right. Do you guys have some rope so we can get in and out? Yes. They have like a rope ladder. Great. Okay. You have like some old rice bags because once we wrangle it, we got to put it in something. Okay. Let's walk around and get some sticks because we're going to need some sticks for this activity.
Yeah.
So we finally get ourselves equipped. Cameron jumps down. I climb down after him. And once we get down there, it's like, okay, you know, the funny things about plans is they're great. You know, in the words of Mike Tyson, until you get punched in the face. You know, you got to plan when you're outside the train car. You got to plan when you're on top of the train car. You got to plan until you land with your feet inside the train car and you realize this is literally Indiana Jones.
Yes.
And there's reticulated pythons all around me. And they're all a little bit, you know, they've been in this train car for weeks now. You know, so, okay, what do we do? First thought was, do we just try to eliminate the small ones so we can just deal with the big ones? That seems like the right way to go about that. So there's some 10-footers, some 12-footers. We're able to, you know, kind of separate those out with the sticks, get those guys bagged up.
So you're just like reorganizing and bagging them out? Is that what you're doing?
You know, if we get with a big one and, you know, if you think about a large snake, it's not only this large, you know, 20 plus foot animal, but this animal kills to live. You know what I'm saying? That's his job. That's his role. He kills to live. He is so badass that he just, everything he eats, he has to kill it and then swallow it whole. So he's incredibly strong, incredibly powerful. And to make it to 25, 20 plus feet, he's lived a long time and experienced some stuff. So he's probably pretty good at what he does. Yeah.
Do you have, what's the lighting like in there? Do you have good lighting?
We got the sunlight from the porthole on the top. Yeah. We got a couple of flashlights we're holding. There's a couple of villagers shining flashlights down for us. So it's as bootleg of an operation as you can possibly imagine.
I'm getting chills thinking about it.
And trust me, we are as far from any modern medical care as possible. I had a friend a few years ago in Texas who was a large python breeder, and he actually bred reticulated pythons. And he had this giant walk-in enclosure, and long story short, one of the pythons bit him on the back of his thigh. But you know that artery that runs on the inside of your thigh? This was probably a 16, 17-foot reticulated python. It bit, and it as it pulled back and as he pulled away, it ripped that artery. So a tremendous amount of blood. A couple days hospital stay, a lot of stitches. So the bites, you know, are typically recoverable, but that slashing motion, if it's able to get an artery like that, I don't know, 6 hours, 8 hours for modern medical care, you know, you and I might not be having this podcast.
Right. So you're an idiot and you jump down into this train car, poorly lit, filled with snakes, and you got sticks, though.
We got sticks and rice bags. Yay! So with the smaller snakes, we get them into the bag, you know, tie the rope around it. Villagers get those out. Okay. So now we're dealing with about three or four larger ones. All right. So we get the largest one and aside, and we don't necessarily like measure it, but we're visually scoping it out, and it's pretty clear that it is not 25 plus feet. Okay. So let's contact the folks at the zoo, let them know what's going on, and we'll come back and deal with this. So we contact the folks at the zoo, come back the next day because the zoo folks says, even if it's not 25 plus feet, let's measure it. Let's see what it's like. Yeah. We may still want it. Okay, so we go back. They're all piled back up, separate out, get the largest one out. And he's got a rice bag. I've got a rice bag. And our plan is to literally jump on top of the snake with our rice bags as shields. And somewhere underneath the rice bags, try to find its neck. And, you know, one of us is going to get a hold of it right behind its head. And then from there, we'll try to wrangle it into a rice bag so we can tie it up and then get it out of there. So, two dudes, giant, rice bags, dive on this giant snake. I got the head. Oh, my God, I don't have it. Oh, I got it. So it's yelling and screaming. Yes. it's 90 plus degrees inside this, train car. We're both dripping in sweat. Finally get it wrangled. I got my hands around its head and it's opening its mouth and this head's about a foot long.
That's great.
Eventually, he's able to get control of the body. We get it, most of the body into the bag. A snake that long is extremely heavy and powerful. So it takes a while to get the body in the bag.
Yeah.
And it's like, so I want to be able to put the head into the bag far enough down where I can get my hands out, but we can also close up the bag before the head comes shooting back out.
Whoa, my God.
So I'm trying to get it down, but the snake's trying to come back up. I mean, obviously the snake was trying to resist capture, essentially.
Yeah.
So it takes a couple of attempts where I can finally get the snake down far enough, and then we're able to kind of get some of the body on top of the head before I'm able to release the head, close up the bag, get the bag tied up, and have the villagers hoist the snake out. In the end, we do get the snake out of the train car. It's about a 21, 22-foot reticulated python. It ended up going back to my buddy Cameron has a zoo in essentially an animal facility in Jakarta. Goes back there. I can't remember exactly who purchased this animal. after it was, you know, cleaned up and kind of acclimated to captivity. But that's the train car story.
Wow. Is that your most dangerous experience, do you think?
I'll give you one more. Maybe not quite as dangerous from a wild perspective, but pretty bananas. So later on in the trip, Cameron has been talking to me about Cobra shows. There's a thing where you, as a some businessmen, when they come over to Indonesia, they go to the Cobra show. The guy handles the Cobra, does stuff with the Cobra, hacks the Cobra's head off, drains blood from the Cobra into like a whiskey drink, cuts open the bile gland of the Cobra, pokes it, drains the bile into this whiskey drink, and they drink this. It's supposed to bring you some good luck, and it's supposed to help you when you visit the ladies of entertainment later that night.
Oh, okay.
So these guys, the Cobra guys, also are usually involved in some ways in the reptile trade. So they buy more than cobras. They may have some other snakes. So we want to go see all the other snakes. And I'm kind of interested in seeing the cobra show. I don't want to see a cobra die. Yeah. I'm not down for that. But, you know, I want to kind of take in the whole experience. So we get there and, you know, the guy's taking us out back where he's got all his snakes stored up. So he's pulling out various types of venomous snakes from Indonesia. Here's some crates. Here's different types of cobras. Here's a couple of other venomous snakes, you know, from the area. And we're documenting and we're taking photos. And he's got a really unusually colored crate. Normally they're kind of like a bluish, blackish, and cream. This one's kind of a purple and almost gold, very lakery. It was beautiful. I got some amazing shots of it. Only one I've ever seen that coloration. And eventually we get to the cobras that he uses in the cobra shows. And he pulls three of the cobras out and he sets them on this table. And they're doing their cobra thing. They're kind of like cobraing up and striking at each other. And obviously this guy's what he does for a living. He's just chilling, talking. And he kind of absentmindedly sits down next to the table where the cobras are and puts his hand down on the edge of the table by the cobras. One of those cobras turns, bam, bites him on his hand. I have my video camera and I go from the cobras to my friend Cameron, back to the cobras, back to my friend Cameron, going, did he just get bit? Oh my God, he just got bit. Oh my God, he just got bit. So I back away and I still got the camera going and I've got to put this footage up someplace because you can hear me freaking out. Dude, I don't want to see this guy die.
Yeah.
I didn't come to Indiana to see somebody die. We got to get out of here. We got to leave right away. I can't watch this dude die. The guy senses my panic, and he's like, no, I'm okay. I've been bit before. And he starts rubbing his hand. And so we're talking, and he's starting to rub his hand a little bit more intensely. I'm like, that thing is burning. Mm-hmm. It's starting to hurt. I've never been bit, but I know that you are in some discomfort right now. And I can see the redness kind of coming. Well, about a few minutes later, a businessman shows up, wants the cobra show. Of course, the guy gets the cobra that bit him, does the cobra show, you know, hacks off the head, does the whole thing. The guy drinks the cobra blood, bile, whiskey drink, slams it down. He leaves, and then the guy who got bit, I watch him walk to the edge of this kind of compound, which is kind of back into the jungle, and lean against a tree stump. And I can see his eyes start to kind of roll back in his head, and his tongue is starting to swell, and he's having some difficulty breathing. And he keeps assuring us that he's going to be fine. I'm like, I'm not going to stay and find out. So we left. So that's my cobra story.
Oh, so you just left him to die. Way to go, Chad.
He said he was fine. He said he'd been bit all the time. And I was not enough of an Indonesian language barrier to say, hey, man, I don't trust you. Let me take you to a hospital. He kept insisting, I'm fine.
He can't speak. He's like, I'm fine. His tongue's so swollen. I'm fine, guys. It's fine. No big deal. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's insane. Well, he kind of deserved it, though, if he's constantly chopping off their heads. What a jerk.
Yeah, I thought, you know, karma is, you know, a bitch. And, hey,
absolutely.
Sometimes Sometimes the rabbit's got the gun. Sometimes the snake wins.
Exactly. And maybe it did. We'll never know because you bailed on him.
We left.